It's one thing to listen to doom and gloom about food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation. It's quite another thing to hear practical, immediately actionable advice from experts who can help you reduce the fear, anxiety, and burden of these problems.
Tune in now to the Surviving Hard Times podcast from the Finding Genius Foundation with Richard Jacobs. Before we begin, a note from our sponsor. I'm Richard Jacobs, Executive Director of the nonprofit Finding Genius Foundation and host of the Finding Genius podcast. In late 2016, I was rear-ended at 65 miles an hour by a truck on the highway, which sent me off-road into a ditch. The impact of the collision gave me a concussion and other injuries. At the hospital, a CT scan showed that I had thyroid nodules, which turned out to be cancer. It was then, when I had a biopsy in my neck, that I realized even if I was a millionaire, I wouldn't want a second or a third biopsy due to the pain and the invasiveness of it. And appointments at that time for thyroid experts were 3 to 6 months out. And I was worried about dying now, even if that was irrational. So because of this, I've decided to raise money to conduct a literature review on steroids, on the causes of anxiety and depression, a condition that affects well over 50 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide. Our goal is to create a codex, a guide, that reveals all possible treatments for anxiety and depression for people that live with the condition, or for loved ones that have it, as my wife and my son do. To find out more about our fundraiser, visit findinggeniusfoundation.org and click on Current Initiatives. And now, to our guest. Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Surviving Hard Times podcast, sponsored by the Finding Genius Foundation.
I have Chris Taylor. He's called the Financial Prepper. So we're going to talk about his YouTube channel and his videos and content and all that stuff. So, Chris, thank you for coming.
How you doing? I'm just glad to be here, Richard. Yeah. Hopefully we can help wake some people up.
I think so. Tell me a bit about your history first. How did you even start thinking about, you know, prepping in any of its forms? You know, what was life like for you before you started on this journey?
Well, it really goes back to, I learned how, I guess it starts with physically. I got physically fit, and then I wanted to do something else. So I got into rental properties, and after I got into rental properties, I learned, I didn't want to trade my time for money anymore. So I started investing. And when you start investing, you start learning from really intelligent people. Just kind of try to seek those guys out, you know, see what they're into, what they're doing. And you start learning that the wealthy people are bracing for impact. You know, you've got people like Michael Burry and Jamie Dimon and just incredible, super smart people are saying, hey, we're fixing to enter a depression. And you start researching and there's no way around it. The food shortages every day. So I started a YouTube channel, started covering food shortages, started covering food plants burning down. You know, we're over 60 food plants this year that have caught fire.
Yeah. What's the typical number, by the way?
I would say it's about 4 or 5 times what it should be. I'm not
right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's no real number. It's just very, very odd how that would, there's just too many things. There's too many things along with ESG and our president cutting off oil and all these strange, we're running out of diesel oil. Have you heard that one? I just did a story on that. We're running out of the additives.
Yeah. Diesel exhaust fluid, right. That allows trucks to run. Otherwise it becomes bricked.
No, not the exhaust fluid. We're running out of that too. Oh. The oil, the actual oil that goes in the truck.
That's insane.
We have the oil, but we do not have all the additives that go into it that makes it work. There's only two places that make those additives, and they're just out of it. And they're saying it's 4 to 8 weeks they're going to be out. But, you know, I hate to put a timestamp on anything. It seems like I'm always early. But that's kind of how I kind of started waking up, and there's just no way not to see it. If people will open their eyes up and pull their head out of the sand, they'll be able to see, wow, this isn't, you know, doom and gloom or fear mongering. This is really going to happen. And there's going to be a lot of people that suffer, and mainly the people overseas. I think it's going to be disgusting to watch what happens to them.
I've heard that there's going to be death from starvation by hundreds of millions of people. I don't know what the exact estimates are, but it looks like hundreds of millions, maybe even up to a billion, which is crazy. I mean, that many people, it's terrible.
Yeah. And everybody wants to blame it on Russia. And, you know, that is the bread. Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe. I get that. But there was already problems before that. There was food shortages before that ever started.
So what do you think, you know, like, I don't know, everyone likes to say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory, that kind of stuff. But I'm not going to say that to you. What are you seeing and where do you think this is coming from? What's your honest assessment?
Well, the conspiracy theory thing, I get that a lot. And usually I'm reading straight off the World Economic Forum. I'm reading facts and quotes from the people that are in charge. And it's like, I don't see how this can be a conspiracy. They're telling you exactly what they're doing. By 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. This is not me saying it. That's the people that are in charge that meet, that have all the money, that have, you know, all the wealth. It's them saying it, not me. I'm just telling you what they're saying. So there's going to be a time where we're right, just like, you know, the food shortages, the crop failures, that, you know, I've been calling this stuff for 6 months or longer, and now it's starting to show up, and then nobody likes to talk about it. You know, just like the mandated medicine that I wasn't crazy about. What was the other question?
Well, I wanted to ask you, we'll get into the details shortly, but so you're actually starting to see the things that you prognosticated 6+ months ago. You're actually starting to see at least localized food shortages. And tell listeners a bit about what you're literally seeing right now, you know, end of June 2022, which is when we're recording.
Okay, so I have people in my comment section. I've got a Telegram, a financial prepper Telegram, and I do call outs about 2 or 3 times a week. It's kind of like a boots on the ground or community, helpful community call outs, pretty much. Is I name it something different. I don't know if I'm going to name it just yet, but you can get, I'll read through there and say, hey, there's no oil in Florida. Hey, we don't have any food here. There's no baby aspirin in Canada. This lady looked all over the place, couldn't find any baby aspirin. The medical supplies are really running thin in a lot of different places. It's not centralized. It's not like it's, you know, there's a glut of goods right now. That's what's so strange, because nothing goes straight up and nothing goes straight down. So the supply chain is starting to get tight again. And now we've got these glut of goods, and there's actually a surplus at stores like Target and places like that of mainly the goods we don't need. But if you can buy, I'm trying to encourage people right now to, you know, if you're not a prepper, you're just kind of getting into it, or you're starting to realize, hey, you know, food prices are only going up. You know, that's one thing that we've been trying to tell people. You can beat the stock market. If you'll buy food that you're going to eat anyway, you'll beat the stock market. And it's so far.
Instead of buying Bitcoin, you should buy Foodcoin, you know, AKA food, because it's going to go up.
Well, I'm big. I like Bitcoin too. I mean, I think
I'm just
it's speculation, but yeah, you're right. That's a lot of times I say, try to bring stuff to reality. Like one laying hen, I've got chickens, and a lot of people want to have chickens, but they can't or whatever. They're not ready. I think that 1 ounce of silver, one silver round, will be worth one laying hen. I think that's how, and I'm sure the ratio will get a little bit off, but right now it's pretty close. As our currency, as they devaluate our currency and food becomes more scarce. Like if you go back to Venezuela, that's the closest thing we have as of late, you know, the hyperinflation that happened there. And yes, they were different. They weren't the world reserve currency. They didn't have a bond market. They didn't have a tax revenue, but it was funny. Eggs went up 15,000x, not percent. Eggs went up 15,000 times the original price. Apples went up 6,587x. Potatoes went up 2,000. I mean, and the only thing that rivaled food was gold. Gold went up 25,000x. So like in 2017, gold was 11,500. In 2018, it was worth 3 million. So that you were able to really hedge against that with physical precious metals and also eggs and food, because food was a real problem. So that's, I think that's exactly what we're getting into.
Let's baby step people. So if someone today is listening and they want to prepare somehow, and you know, they're just not used to any of this, you know, they've been living a life of convenience like we all have. What are some of the first things they can do to start preparing? Like, what's level one in your eyes?
I would go to the store and get some rice. Carbohydrates are pretty available right now, rice and oatmeal and stuff like that. I eat oatmeal every day, rice just about every day. So I would secure some of those items, and I usually use a vacuum sealer, and I'll get the 25-pound bag of rice, which isn't very much, and it'll feed you for a while, carbohydrates. And you can dump it in your vacuum bag, suck the air out, and put it in your cabinet, put it in your pantry. Start slowly filling your pantry up with food that you're going to eat anyway, because it's food is only going to go up. So if you can try to start small, so like the people in China, you know, they locked the people in China down, and they started literally starving in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They really started. I mean, they were screaming and hollering out the windows. And if they'd have just had a little bit of food on hand, you know, they probably could have made it through that. So like canned goods, that's a simple one. You know, canned goods, rice, oatmeal. There's all kinds of channels. I watched one the other day, American Prepper Girl. She bought 60,000 calories for under $100. And they weren't the best calories, but, you know, that's something that would get you through until you could get in a better place. Eggs, if you could get some powdered eggs. Protein's going to be really hard to find. You know, protein's usually expensive. Meat, you know, even protein grains with protein is more expensive. Powdered eggs they're really hard to find right now. If you can get some chickens, I've got videos on how to do it. It's really not hard, and most people like it after they get into it, and they're just out there crapping out omelet. You know, but like you said, though, to baby steps, a lot of people are in apartments. I would say canned goods, you know, beans, rice, oatmeal, vacuum seal them up and start eating them. Eat off the front. And every time you go to the store, replace it on the back. It's like you have your grocery store at your house. That's a really good place to start and get some way. If you don't have water, it's hard for me to think about water because I'm in Louisiana and I've got water everywhere. I could just walk about anywhere and scoop up some water and boil it and be okay. But a lot of people have trouble with water insecurity. And with the drought going on, I can only imagine. So, you know,
well, even let's go, if before we go through all the stuff, I just want to go step by step.
Sure. Yeah.
Protein, you know, yes, you can buy it. I know some situations where people could buy like an eighth of a cow or a half a cow and they could store it in their freezers for quite a long time. But where, I mean, can people keep chickens and raise them to eat? Or is it really just the eggs? Can people keep ducks? Or are there any animals that people could keep to eat, you know, for protein, or is that a very difficult thing to do?
Okay. Small scale, just getting started. Rabbits. You can get a few rabbits and it'll just about feed you protein forever, I guess. They'll procreate and you can really get along with the rabbits. Meat chickens. I don't have meat chickens because there's never a good time to go pluck a chicken. But, you know, I just use it for the eggs because eggs is a really good protein and fat together.
It's a renewable resource. It's green energy. Just kidding.
Sure.
Actually really is green energy.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
That's it, man. And the fertilizer works so good in the garden. You know, I just don't see any downside to it other than a lot of people don't have the room. And, you know, a lot of people don't have time to do chickens. I mean, I understand that, but rabbits, laying chickens would be I don't have rabbits. I really can't have any more chores at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. So rabbits could be viable. Chickens, at least for their eggs, could be viable.
But really, hang on. Really, I would say building a relationship with a local farmer. I think that would be the most, that would be probably the best thing for most people to do, but you need to start those relationships now, you know?
Yeah. You know what? I just thought about this last night with food and with fertilizer shortages and other shortages, actually probably the small farmers that can make their own fertilizer from animals and retain their own water from rain, let's say, they might be the most stable going forward instead of the big, you know, grocery stores and everything.
Yeah. We definitely need more small farmers. It's just that fertilizer thing you speak of is a big deal. I didn't realize the guy that came up with NPK commercial fertilizer won a Nobel Prize. That's how we feed the masses. We make it from natural gas, and there's almost a war on that stuff now. You know, it's
the Haber-Bosch process. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So
There's a really good book actually called The Alchemy of Air by Thomas Hager or Hagen. And it talks about, you know, how the Haber-Bosch process came about. And the world was only really able to sustain about a billion people until we learned to make artificial fertilizer. So if we don't have enough, our population is 8 billion. That's not good.
Yeah, the World Food Program, WFP, the UN's WFP just cut Africa's food subsidies for 50%. So it's going to affect 3 out of every 4 people, and they're already starving, you know. And I got into the article a little more, and it wasn't the donations were there. They're not being able to resource the food to actually get to the product. So it's starting now. It's already starting. We're in the descent. I don't know what else to do besides the stuff we're talking about.
Well, that's why we're talking about it. I want to give some practical advice. So let's go back to chickens. Can someone start with one chicken? How many chickens do they need to have enough eggs to eat them regularly? You know, what are some of the things you've learned about dealing with chickens? Let's get into a little bit of the details, you know, so people can learn from your experience.
Chicken, sure. It's really not that much to it. It's really not like people think. They can live in a small area. I built a big coop that I could walk in. I didn't have to, you know, duck down low or anything. There's several different ways to do it. I would suggest more than one chicken. They get lonely. One chicken will get lonely and probably won't lay very many eggs. If you have a chicken's usually good for about an egg a day, not quite an egg a day, but I think it's like 280 eggs a year on average or something like that, maybe 260, some of them are 300. So, you know, if you've got 6 chickens, having a dozen is really not that much bigger of a deal.
Okay.
And they put themselves up at night, you know, you got to make sure their coop's clean. That's a big one. Making sure their coop's clean. We've never had a sick chicken, maybe one time, and ivermectin knocked it out. That stuff's really good. But let's see, chickens, I don't know what I could tell you. I've got videos on it.
Well, just, you know, like when you, how many chickens what surprised you about having chickens? Was it easier than you thought? Okay, harder than you thought?
Yeah. Everything's trying to get them. That's the biggest problem.
Everyone wants to eat them. Everything.
Everything. Raccoons. We had a fox get into our chicken house, and I put chicken wire around the coop, right? Well, chicken wire is not to keep varmints out. It's to keep chickens in. A fox ripped a hole in that chicken coop and killed 10 of 14 chickens. Yeah, so don't make that mistake. Use hardware cloth. Hardware cloth is a much thicker wire, and they can't really rip through that. Chicken wires, you wouldn't think they'd rip through it, but it was nothing for that fox to rip through it. And they won't quit killing until they're just tired of doing it, I guess. It was devastating. I was at work, and my wife was really upset. Everything's out to get them, and food and water, they need some laying boxes to lay their eggs in. And I really try to encourage people to do that.
What was it like when you had the first few eggs from your chickens? Like, did they taste better, different? Or what was that experience like?
The first few eggs?
Yeah, the first few eggs. Like, did you feel like a rush? Like, I did it, you know, or how'd you feel?
Yeah, it's cool to get your first few eggs. It's you'll notice immediately how they cook up so much better. The white's not runny. It gets really thick and fluffy when you're cooking it. The yolk stays together. My favorite way to eat a fresh egg is poached. When you poach a fresh egg hot out of the chicken's butt, it will stay. It's like you're boiling it out of the shell. It's really good. That's
okay.
Yeah, strange. Having fresh food is really, really, really rewarding. It still is. We covet these eggs. We give them to my mom. She hoards them. They're really good because our chickens eat kale. They eat everything that comes out of the garden. Everything comes out of the kitchen, any kind of scraps, their own shells, you name it.
Oh, really? They can eat all that stuff?
You throw it out there and they will eat it. And they're like composting egg factories.
True. That's very cool. You said that an average chicken, if kept well, will lay about, 280 eggs a year?
Well, every chicken's different, every breed. But I want to say it was unusual to get over 300, and I would say over 250 is pretty much normal.
Wow, that's crazy. Do you know any of the laws surrounding like selling the eggs that you would create, or are there like food co-ops or people that do this and then share? Like one has a chicken, one has a goat, one has a, you know, one grows vegetables, etc. Do you see any swaps between people?
Yes, we're starting to see more of that. I got some people in California that are swapping their eggs for honey. They're swapping, you know, they're bartering with their eggs already. I got a good buddy of mine that's bartering guns for gold and silver. He does that all the time. But, you know, right now we're not doing any of that. We're just giving them, we give to a couple of families that, that don't have much, and we give to my parents, and, you know, I eat the rest of them. We've got 23 chickens, I think. We just hatched. We just incubated 21 more.
Wow.
Yeah, but half of them will be roosters. And some of the chickens we got are 3 or 4 years old. So they're, you know, they're about to slow down. They're only good for so many eggs.
And long will a chicken last until it's pooped out and you have to eat?
You know, I don't really know the answer to that. I want to say it's about 4 years, but it could be longer. I don't really know. Like I said, I'm not really a chicken. We do it, but I don't want to pretend like I'm the end all be all know it all of the subject.
Right. Gotcha. Well, tell me what else you're doing. That, you know, the comments you gave already are very useful, I think, to people that don't know.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm included. Yeah. So tell me about some of the other major things you're doing too.
Okay. Prepare. So there's a lot of people that, you know, what can we do right now? I get that question a lot. And if you'll think about growing your food, and I know you probably won't be able to grow enough food to feed you and your family. I mean, I get that. That's hard to do. But you can grow enough food to subsidize your diet. You know, you can, like me and my wife just got through harvesting potatoes this morning. And I've been telling people it is so easy to grow potatoes. And potatoes is it is packed full of energy. I mean, you could grow a row of tomatoes and it's like water. I mean, you're getting very little nutrition and calories from a tomato. So you can grow tomatoes and they taste good, but they're mostly water and the nutrition isn't really there. You know, it's not like a potato that's packed full of energy. I mean, you can get a lot of miles. You know, think how far you can go on eating 5 potatoes versus 5 tomatoes. So I say that because that is something that most people can do on their porch. You can grow potatoes in a bucket, and I mean a bunch of them too. You can grow, there's videos on how to do it in a barrel. You plant them in the bottom of the barrel and they'll sprout, and then you cover up the potato plant again, leave the head out where it'll keep growing. Every time you cover it up, it'll grow more potatoes. You can literally grow hundreds of pounds of potatoes in a barrel.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I always recommend growing potatoes because I just interviewed a guy, Autopod from Starpath Academy. He lived through the hyperinflation in Romania. And I asked him, I said, what did you do for food? What do we need to look at? He said, we survived on potatoes, lard, and bread. That was the majority of what they ate. So, you know, you can learn a lot from history. And that's why, you know, like I said, anytime in history, eggs was always really up there in price. If you go back to the Weimar Republic in Germany, an egg was like that. You just couldn't find them. And if you could, they were too expensive. So that's why I always lean towards eggs, potatoes, real food that you eat every day. And a lot of people buy buckets of food, you know, freeze dried food from some kind of prepper place. I don't really advise that too much. It's really expensive. And I just wouldn't ever buy anything that I wouldn't eat it every day, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. Potatoes is a good one. Eggs. And if you've got, okay, so you've got your food, right? Let's say you're already doing a few of these things. If you're going to hedge your wealth, you know, you don't want to, you know, the inflation is closer to 20% than it is 10. So that means if you've got $100,000 in the bank, it will effectively buy $80,000 worth of goods and services at the end of this year. So try to think.
If it doesn't get worse.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Right. That's of right now. Sure. Yeah, you're exactly right. I think they're fixing to blow the top off of it. I think they're fixing to.
Oh, well, for different items, too. Like, you know, a dollar will now only buy, you know, 40 cents a gas, essentially. by the end of this year, it could be a dollar would only buy 10 cents a gas. It's going up so much. You know, gas is, I'm here in Texas, it's gone up. It's more than double from, a couple of years ago. So certain things are inflating like insanely. Certain things, not so much, still meeting 15-20%, but some things are really off the charts.
Yeah, fuel is, I believe that is the death knell to the economy. If we don't get fuel prices down, that's what this whole thing runs off of. That is the lifeblood of the economy is diesel fuel. It goes in everything. Every good you get gets delivered powered by diesel fuel. And if you really want to shut something down, you know, take the blood from it. That's exactly what's going on. And it's costing me, I do natural gas Haynesville shale well hookups. I've been a pipe fabricator for 15 years. I'm getting out of it now, but it cost me $100 every other day. No, yes. It's $200. Yeah. It's $200 every 2 days. Yes. $100 a day to get to work and back. You know, how many people can do that? I mean, I can do it because, you know, I don't owe too many people and I try to live my life, where, you know, I don't like being in debt and it's just kind of how I stay, unless it's good debt, like rental properties or things that pay me to own them. But most people don't have $500 in their bank account, in their savings account. And when those people can't get to work because fuel prices are so high, or they can't buy food because it's so expensive because it took so much diesel to get it here, they had to go up on the price again, not including the inflation that's already happening because, you know, even supply and demand's affecting it as well. That's good. That's the biggest takeaway, is that the diesel fuel is really going to make things worse. On top of the DEF shortage, on top of the oil, you know, it's so many things. It's like it's the perfect storm. It seems planned, really.
Do you think it's deliberate, or it's just a confederation of fools to keep doing the wrong thing?
And I really hate to talk like that, but I just don't see how it's not. I can't see, you know, if you want to know what our government's going to do on the important decisions to make, they're going to pick the wrong decision every single time. They always pick the wrong one. It's the very opposite of what we should be doing. It makes absolutely no sense, the moves they've made, other than collapse the country, make the people hungry, control the food, control the people. That really sounds doomy, but I just can't see it any other way. If there's another way, let me know.
Yeah, no. If there's another way, let them know. We'll see if they do. Potatoes was a good insight. That's a nutrient-packed food. It sounds like that's pretty easy to grow. Like you said, you can grow them. What else? Are you collecting rainwater, or are you just relying on wells or city water? What about that part of the equation?
Yeah, I've got a well that's a really good clean well on my property. I just dug a pond, a 2-acre pond, which we don't have any rain right now, so it's a big dust bowl. But like I said, water around here is not a big deal. It's going to be a big deal for a lot of people. And if you could get a Berkey style water filter or some kind of Life Straw or some way to filter water, just in case, you know, because you can only go about, was it 3 days without water? So,
well, it depends when, you know, if it hits you in the middle of summer right now where it's like 100 degrees, I don't know if you're going to make 3 days.
3 hours, but, maybe.
Yeah. No, seriously.
Yeah. I don't know all about it. So, no, so I'm
do
not
have
doing
friends, anyone that's collecting rainwater, or the people that you hang out with, they don't need to.
I don't have anybody. Well, that's not true. There's a few people in a few of my subscribers do that, but you know, I don't know. It's, I mean, collecting rainwater should be pretty straightforward. If you don't have rainwater, just find a way to, you know, harvest the water off your house, gutter it into a big tank. You can always treat it later, but no, I really don't. My neighbor does it for his chickens, but I don't have any reason to do that.
Well, that's good. It's one less thing you have to worry about, you know? So you said you this morning you were like harvesting potatoes and you dug a pond, et cetera. How much time and effort does it take? Again, even we're just talking like level one or level two prepping, however you define it. But, you know, for someone that's really busy right now, or this is so alien to them, they're like, you know, how much time do they need to spend to make some kind of impact for themselves and their family?
And that's going to be their conviction. Whatever your convictions are about how bad it's going to get, I would just say, you know, because it costs a lot of money too, not just time. you know, time is one thing, and it, you know, it is time to maintain 15 acres and chickens. And, I'm not the one digging the pond. I had it dug because I'm super busy. I mean, my wife tends to the chickens for the most part. I have a guy that's mowing my place. You know, I'm really having to think about my time as my most valuable asset. So I get that completely.
If we asked your wife, like, how long does it take for her to administer the chickens every day? How much time do you see her spending?
I bet she's got about 30 minutes in a day, maybe an hour on the weekend, possibly to clean the coop. You know, all it is to it is letting them out in the morning and making sure they got water and food and picking up the eggs. There's really not a whole lot to do once you get set up. It's just, but here's the thing. You're going to pay all that on the front end. You're going to have to build the coop and make all the mistakes and do all the, you know, because you're not going to just have a successful, you're going to be like me and a fox might get them or something else is going to happen or they get mites or, you know, there's all these things that happen just like gardening. You're not going to grow a perfect garden the first time. So you're going to have to pay the time on the front end to get it set up and automated as possible. That was my goal, is to have a garden that I walk through like a grocery store that I didn't have to weed, and a chicken coop that has an electric door, that's got 5 gallon buckets full of food that I only have to fill up once a week. Now, I said she does 30 minutes because we hatched those 21 in the incubator. So that is adding a little more time to her. Other than cleaning the coop once a week, because it is important, it's really not that time consuming. Now, everything else we do, you know, you're going to have to figure that out. Grow a small garden and you'll learn how to cut corners and make it more time efficient. You know, drip tape. We use drip tape in the garden. Everything I do, I try to get as least time involved in it as possible. Pay it on the front end, get it ready with drip tapes and timers and plastic and, you know, all that stuff, cages. It'll take me all weekend to get it set up. But after that, it's on a timer and it's done. I don't have to mess with it every day like most gardeners do. I got a video on that too. I built an attachment for my tractor that lays the tape, the drip tape, and the plastic and heals it up. And it's pretty neat. It's called plastic mulch. Cool. Yeah.
What is this drip tape? How does it work? Just out of curiosity.
Drip tape it goes 2 inches under the soil, and it has little emitters every 6, 8, or 12 inches. So you turn the water on. Each row has a valve at the end of it that goes into a piece of poly, a little small plastic valve. So I can shut off any row I want to or turn on any row I want to. And it's on a timer. So when the timer goes off, it releases the water and it goes into the manifold, the poly line. Then it fills up the drip tape. The drip tape splices in the side of that poly line. And the drip tape swells up and it just starts dripping water. It just omits water all the way down the row at 10 PSI. So it waters the garden from underneath the plastic mulch. The plastic mulch is just like white plastic, a sheet of white plastic over it, real thin. So the white plastic keeps your moisture under there. It keeps the soil kind of loose for the roots to grow really good. And it also keeps the rain from washing it away if we ever have that again.
But, yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, it really changed my garden. It's the difference between me having a successful garden and not, to be honest with you.
Oh, wow. Well, it's important I asked you then, you know?
Yeah, check that video out. It really did change things.
Well, let's tell listeners how to find out more from you. So what's the name of your YouTube channel, and, you know, what can people put in to find your videos?
Yeah, just YouTube Financial Prepper. That's it. I'll be the first one to pop up, and you'll see me doing news stories of food shortages. You'll see me doing gold miner stocks, because I think when we run out of physical, they're going to go, they're the next bubble. I gave warnings out about the stock market when it was at all time highs, saying how all the wealthy people were selling. I smacked the anvil. I got a big anvil. I'm smacking it with a hammer when there's a warning about something that's going to affect all those, to try to wake people up. I'll be right there at Financial Prepper. Come check me out. I've got a Telegram channel as well called Financial Prepper. Mm. And tons of people over there sharing valuable information. The people in the comments are salt of the earth. They're like the best people you've ever met. Get in the comments and they'll help you any way they can.
Okay, excellent. Well, Chris, it was really good to speak to you, and I learned a lot of useful things. I think listeners will as well. So thanks for coming on the podcast. Very, very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Before you stop listening, ask yourself, what are one or two useful things you heard on this podcast that can help you overcome food and fertilizer shortages, skyrocketing prices, the cost of living, or your job being outsourced overseas or eliminated due to automation? Please like and subscribe and tell your friends and family about their Surviving Hard Times podcast. We're all going to need help now and in the near future.